Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Dustin Hawkinsmith. Just completed the Father's Day weekend. Dusty, how did you make out? I know you're a dad. You must have done well.
Well, let me say this. So this Father's Day was also my wedding anniversary. So I was talking to my father-in-law about this, and I said, you know, us guys, we get 2 days a year. It's a birthday and it's Father's Day. Now I have to share one of them. Frankly, the optimist in me says, hey, double the fun, right? Double the occasions. But the glass half empty says, you know what? This I get 2 days and now I'm giving one up. You know, I'm more on the optimism side, but still, it was a day. It was a day for sure.
Well, I hope you had a good one, Dusty, with your wife and your daughter, and hopefully that went well for you. All right, Dusty, it is time to hit the Penn State news. We are going to, in quarter two, three, and four, get back to our KSN top 40 most important players, but let's start out with the news. Big news of the week, Penn State got another commitment. It's been a big recruiting month, a lot of big-time visitors to campus. This week it was Tyreek Blanding, a 6'2", 280-pound defensive tackle from New York who made the commitment. Dusty, what are the Nittany Lions getting with Blanding?
You know, early look is I like what he can do. You know, in high school through his junior year, they're lining up him up inside and outside. He's long enough to be able to kind of make that work at this level as an edge guy. He's big and strong and powerful enough to make it work at the next level inside, which is what it looks like is going to happen with him. Lot of effort, lot of energy. You like the length. He's kind of built, you know, I think you see a lot of defensive tackles who, you know, are a little lighter than him at this stage, and he carries it well. So he's a three-star prospect across the board, but I really liked him. I mean, I think obviously at that position, need to get a little stronger. He's going to probably have to get a little bit bigger, but quickness is on his side, and once he starts brushing up that technique and kind of use that leverage a little bit more in his favor, he's a nice looking prospect, and I think they're getting a good one here and the first official interior defensive lineman of this class. And it looks like as we go forward here on this segment, we'll hear more about it, but Penn State's kind of shifting to a defensive player approach now. The next crop of players, the prime targets, there's a lot of defense involved. It started out with a lot of offense so far in this class.
It has, and I'm sure some of that is with the new defensive coordinator, Manny Diaz, coming in. It just takes a little bit more time to build up those relationships and make those happen. So, yes, a lot of the emphasis is there. It was a big, big recruiting weekend. As we record this, there was just that one commitment from Blanding. By the time you hear this, there might be more. There might be another one, but nothing so far for us to talk about here, Dusty. Before we get to the rest of the weekend and several more players, interesting little tidbit in the news this past week, and this is where Michigan has announced they do what they call a maze out as opposed to a white out. I wonder where they got the idea from. But anyway, the announcement was their maze out is going to be when they host Penn State this year. So I just wanted to ask you, how do you take that if you're a Penn State fan? Is it like flattery that they're saying, hey, this is a big enough game? Is it just, are you concerned because, gee, that kind of atmosphere would rather not play Michigan in that type of atmosphere? What's your take on that?
Well, my take in general is that everybody wants to try to capture what's so good about the whiteout and try to use it themselves. And, you know, Penn State is probably going to be a lot of teams' primary, you know, one of their top teams, top opponents coming in. So they're likely to get that treatment if a school's going to do it. Michigan has been, you know, on the wrong end of a few whiteouts. So I think maybe they're trying to give it back to Penn State. But I would say this, you know, with the maze out at Michigan Stadium, which did not impress me in terms of atmosphere when I was there. Just, I don't know, it just wasn't rowdy. It just wasn't noisy. A lot of people, but maybe the quietest 110,000 fans that I've seen. I don't think Penn State will be calling timeout before their first play of the game. Let's put it that way.
Of course, a reference to a couple years ago when that did happen to Michigan because of the crowd noise. All right, Dustin, we talked about the one commitment that Penn State got this past weekend. Let's talk about the rest of the weekend. And it was a big weekend for bringing in the recruits. We know once James Franklin gets guys in the door, gets them to visit Penn State, that's so important. And we see the effect that that has on many recruits. One position that I've been particularly interested in is linebacker, where there's been several names that we've talked about for months who've been considering Penn State, and we thought were leaning Penn State's way. A couple of them have now committed elsewhere, but there's still a couple more in Tony Rojas and Tamir Robinson. Two big names for the Nittany Lions to get. It just seems like they haven't been able to close the deal, though.
Yeah, and I think when you're looking at these two, the odds that Penn State gets both of them, it just doesn't look that good. Now, it's possible for sure, and it looks like, you know, with Robinson in particular, he comes off an official visit weekend, and he immediately sets a commitment date, which I believe is July 15th. And so the timing of that kind of speaks to, I've seen everything I needed to see. Let's wrap this thing up. I've got plans to make the commitment. I mean, the timing sets up so that you could glean from it that Penn State is the favorite for him. We'll see what happens. He's a four-star from Brashear High School. He's a former safety. He's kind of growing into being a linebacker, and I think that's an intriguing athlete. He's one of the top 150 players in the country, so he's a really, really good player, a four-star. And then Tony Rojas, I really like him too. Similar clout as a prospect. It looks like he's got a visit to Georgia coming up, and that it's going to be probably a two-horse race. And you figure Georgia has the recency advantage. They've got a national championship. They've got sort of that SEC allure. That's a tough one to see, you know, your top linebacker target go down south the weekend after he visits you and trying to survive that. So if his decision-making process is sound and can really put these two schools side by side and not think so much about the most recent visit, then Penn State's got a shot here. But Georgia does have the last say probably in this race, and that's a tough one to survive, as Penn State experienced just last week.
Exactly. I was just going to bring that up. They lost. They had a decommitment from an offensive lineman who got the offer from Georgia. And you've got to feel, as a Penn State fan, and we talked about this in another show, Dusty, where Penn State got someone who was committed to Rutgers, decided to decommit because he was getting more interest, and ends up at Penn State. They then lose a recruit who was committed to them to go to Georgia. And in college football, there is this pecking order where, you know, if you're looking to Rutgers and Penn State gives you an offer, good chance they're going to move. Just ask Saquon Barkley, right? If you're Penn State, though, and then that player committed to you gets an offer from Alabama or Clemson or Georgia or Ohio State, you got to worry, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, those are the schools. I mean, you talk about those three in particular that you named. Anytime they come along after the fact and offer, you know, the kids, especially the ones who are a little bit more on the clout chasing side, who, you know, there are some kids that maybe Georgia comes along and offers, and it doesn't mean a whole lot to them because of where their priorities are and if they want to stay close to home or whatever, the relationship with James Franklin and the staff. There are some times where Georgia might come along and might not mean much, but a lot of kids, you know, you get that SEC offer from the defending national champs, or you get that SEC offer from Nick Saban, or Ohio State wants you, the cream of the Big Ten crop. You have to take a good long look at what those schools are offering and why they're offering. You know, sometimes, even if it is those schools, you can't come along late when you haven't been in it from the beginning and expect to build that relationship late. Maybe sometimes a kid takes it as a slight, but a lot of times you're right. When you see what Joshua Miller did, it's going to go that way sometimes. And for Tony Rojas, he's got a legitimate Georgia offer. They like him. I don't see why they wouldn't like him. So if he is in really that camp where he's chasing that national championship, where he's chasing, you know, SEC competition, that's a really tough offer to go head to head with. You just hope that what you're building there and the family atmosphere and what you're pitching can outweigh all the glitz and glamour of potentially being a Georgia Bulldog.
Another interesting player at an interesting position, London Montgomery. He's a running back from Scranton. He's a Pennsylvania kid. It seems like his recruitment has picked up steam. He wasn't on Penn State's radar real early. They now seem to really want him. Where do you think that one stands?
One way or the other, looks like this is going to be a one running back class for Penn State. It's hard to believe that they're going to have two spots open for running backs. So it looks like London Montgomery or Treyon Webb. London Montgomery is a Pennsylvania kid, as you mentioned. So I like the possibility there. It looks like he's got a little bit more exploring to do also with a visit to Boston College still to come. But Penn State's in pretty good position with Montgomery. Seems to be in pretty good position with Webb too, but it does look to me like this will be an either or scenario, Montgomery or Webb. Both of them really good players.
One last quick note I wanted to get your comment on. Some of the players who are just arriving got their numbers. Not usually a significant thing, but Abdul Carter got the number 11. That has a little extra meaning at Penn State, doesn't it?
Oh, it does, with LeVar and Navarro and Micah. I mean, that is a proud tradition. And I think it probably speaks well of the kid that he's embracing that challenge of wearing that number. And probably is a good thing, ultimately, if you treat that the right way and treat it as like, I've got a lot to hold myself up to here. Let's accept that challenge. And it seems like he is accepting that challenge.
And it's typically a player who doesn't just want to be a good player. He wants to be a special player. And that's what you need to do to hold up that tradition. Great honor for that kid. Hopefully he will live up to that. All right, Dustin, that's it for quarter number one. Quarter number two, we're going to start getting into our KSN Top 40. Stay tuned for that.
This is Jen from Collegiate Athletic Travel. We've been offering travel to the biggest Penn State games for over 50 years. This fall, we continue that tradition in partnership with Keystone Sports Network with a trip to the Penn State Auburn game. Join us for charter flight, staying at the team hotel, transportation to and from the game, and even a great tailgate party at the stadium are included. For more information, go to athletictravel.com or call 1-800-788-4414. See you there.
What defines the special spirit of Penn State? Why Penn State, by author Greg Woodman, looks to Happy Valley in the 1980s for answers. Featuring rare photos, original essays, and exclusive interviews with Coach Paterno, this beautiful 256-page full-color hardback edition explores the why behind We Are. It's chicken soup for the Nittany Lion's soul and makes the perfect gift for any Penn Stater in your life, including you. Order today at whypennstate.com.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.
We are Tech Results, located right here in State College. Whether it's workstation, server, and network installation, problem solving and maintenance, security assessments, or general evaluations. We are your complete IT partner. Learn more at techresults.com. That's TEKResults.com. Or call us at 814-206-0000.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number two. I'm Jim Galante along with Big Daddy Dustin Hawkinsmith. And Dustin, we are going to get back to our top 40 most important players for the Penn State Nittany Lions going into the 2022 season. Just a quick review. I guess it was 2 weeks ago now that we began the series and we covered numbers 40 through 37 in our countdown. It was Caden Saunders at number 40, then Johnny Dixon, then Chop Robinson, and then Tyler Warren. If you have any issues with the way we're ranking them, tough. It's our show. We get to rank them the way we want. And if
only,
you're really
only
upset,
you,
the,
only you have a right to argue with them.
That's right. It's our list, so we get to debate with ourselves that how we ranked them, Dusty. So we'll see how that works out. As I said, we did 40 through 37. And now we get down to number 36, a player that I really like, an incoming freshman at a crowded position that's running back. We're talking about Catron Allen. He's 5'11", 216 pounds. He played at IMG last year, and we saw him in the blue-white game. He was one of those early entry players, Dusty, and we were told he was the thunder to Nick Singleton's lightning, which meant he's that guy who's going to get you that 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Lo and behold, we see him in the blue-white game, and we all go, wait a minute. He's not supposed to be that quick, right?
That was exactly it, and I think it's safe to say that Catron Allen has a little lightning to his game, and Nick Singleton has a little thunder to his game. So I think Allen is a little bit more on the thunder side, and he did have that reputation of being a short yardage or goal line back, however you want to put that. But it wasn't because he was a total bruiser. It wasn't because, you know, he was just coming full steam ahead all the time. I think he just has a knack for managing tight situations. And a lot of times those are, you know, third and ones or third and goals, whatever the case might be, at the goal line. But he does it in a variety of ways. And I think, you know, there is a skill involved and it's part of his game where he can find a little crease and get through that and get maximum yardage when there doesn't look to be a lot there. And I think that skill could very well come in handy with this group. But I also think at this running back position, I mean, it seems foolish to try to predict exactly what's going to happen because there's a lot of moving parts here. There are some veterans. What's Kazai Holmes bringing to the table? Where's Kevon Lee when it comes to the pecking order along with Nick Singleton and Catron Allen? Devin Ford. I mean, there are guys that, you know, I think there's a real competition to be had. But I do feel like at the running back position, along with the offensive line, that change is a good thing. That you can do a little addition by subtraction. You can get some fresh legs in there. And I do feel like if the blue-white version of Catron Allen shows up, which is, you know, I don't see any, looking at his film and what he was able to do at IMG, there's no reason to believe that it won't. He's one of the top three options on the depth chart. And because he's one of the three best options, in my opinion, couple that with his abilities in short yardage, which I don't think is a Kevon Lee strength. I don't think it's a Devin Ford strength. I'm not sure about Kazai Holmes. He's probably their best option in that situation. There's some pretty good incentive for the coaching staff to play this kid. And to your point about the blue-white game where you went into it with one line of thinking about what Catron Allen was, and you came out of it with a different line of thinking, it was almost exactly like the first time we saw Noah Kane. And before he got hurt and before he started to slow down a little bit, before he got a little hesitant because of injuries, Noah Kane was like, wow, he's quicker than I thought he was. I think Catron Allen, coming from the same school, IMG Academy, with a similar frame, similar skill set, I think he to me, looks even a little bit quicker than Noah Kane was as a freshman. And if that's the case, and he's got the same nose for the ball, nose for the goal line, he's got a pretty good shot to play a role in year one. And that's why I've got him on this list. And as the dust settles, it might end up that he's too low on this list. But I think just the uncertainty at the running back position, I want to put him higher, but I need to see it with my own eyes first.
And you make a good point about perhaps wanting him to be higher in this list, but that pecking order, there's literally five guys who think they deserve carries. You're not going to distribute them among all five, are you? And, who do you eliminate? And I think Keziah Holmes is a little bit of the forgotten guy in this because he redshirted last year. But we all know Nick Singleton and his capabilities. I believe the coaching staff was so complimentary of both freshmen who came in early that you think, all right, Catron Allen is going to get his chance also. I don't know how to read that running back room. I don't know where they're going to end up.
I don't think anybody's entitled to anything. Right? Like that goes for Kevon Lee. You're not entitled to the starting job. You're going to have to earn that one. Nick Singleton, you're a five-star, yeah, and everybody's got some really good things to say about you, but you're going to have to earn your keep also. Devin Ford, you're the veteran of this group, but clearly nothing's going to be handed to you either, and I think that's a pretty ideal situation from a competition standpoint, but a couple of guys are going to get squeezed out. As we learned last year, they do have a top five, but they're really looking to mainly limit that rotation to three guys. And so you can obviously see that two guys, if that's the case, are going to be squeezed out and relegated to bit roles. You're going to have some nice insurance policies on this roster if somebody gets hurt. So that's a good thing. But it is a very fine line with the running back position where you want five scholarship guys. You want five guys who can contribute. But it is hard to keep number four and number five happy. And if my prediction holds true that the two freshmen emerge as two of the top three guys, and Kevon Lee has kind of earned his place, I think it's going to be hard to unseat him for a top three job. You're going to have guys who have been around for a little while, potentially in that fourth and fifth role. Now, Keziah Holmes, in a small sample size 2 years ago, I liked the raw skills. And he's a forgotten man because they flipped the script a little bit. They needed to burn his redshirt as a freshman, so they redshirted him last year. Just because he redshirted last year doesn't mean he's not going to be a factor here. I just don't know how big of a factor he's going to be. It's going to be a really interesting competition, and I suspect probably through the end of training camp. And then throughout the season, we've seen this rotation be a very fluid concept, either by merit or by injury. You're going to see some changes, and I think it's going to be really, really important. I'm sure Jaywon Sider will say this at points too, that those fourth and fifth guys, whoever they are, they need to remain ready and prepare as if they're starters.
There's a good chance what we see as the rotation in game one against Purdue will not be what the rotation is later in the season, even in a couple weeks after that. All right, Dusty, the next one, another interesting one, quarterback Christian Vaiu, who we have ranked at number 35, but boy, he's only one play away from being what, a top 10, top 5, top 3 player on this list?
Without a doubt. I mean, I think we saw last year how detrimental it is whenever you didn't have the ability or didn't have the wherewithal to develop your backup quarterback. Now, suddenly he's thrust into a situation on the road at Iowa, hostile crowd, tough defense, pinned in his own territory. He was not ready for that at all. So having a guy like Vaiu who's shown, the tangible stuff, the intangible stuff, to believe that if he's in that situation again, that he's going to be able to do something with it and at least be able to lead the team to a win. So there's that. And there's also the fact that, I think you can change offensive coordinators all you want. At some point in time, these guys are getting a little bit run happy with the quarterback. You know, there have been times where dry stretches have meant that the best play you've got is keeper stuff, or the best play you've got is for Clifford to tuck and run. And it's going to expose him to injury, in addition to the fact that you've got uncertainty along the offensive line. So this backup quarterback position is a very important one. And you're right that Christian Bayou is number 35 now because he's not a starter. He might not ever be needed. But if Sean Clifford gets hurt for an extended period of time, he moves way up the list. If Sean Clifford gets hurt on the road against a ranked team, he moves up the list. I mean, there's such a fine line here. And I think finally having an offensive coordinator back for a second year, having the ability to give Christian Veilleux meaningful reps at practice, meaningful reps in games, means he's going to be a heck of a lot more prepared to make the most of his opportunity if or when it comes. And we've seen over the past couple of years that time has come for Penn State's backup. Will Levis a couple of years ago and Taquan Roberson last year.
Is there any chance Christian Veilleux gets on the field for meaningful plays without Sean Clifford getting hurt?
I mean, it's really tough. Like, we've seen two versions of Sean Clifford in basically each of his three seasons as a starter. And some of it was impacted by injury. Some of it was related, like, the way he started last year. If he were able to stay healthy and upright and was 100% the rest of the way, I would definitely say no. But, you know, a couple of years ago when things were going south, before they really shifted into that run-heavy mode in the second half of 2020, he was benched. You know, he was flat-out benched. And I don't see the same thing happening, but I think we've seen hot Sean Clifford and cold Sean Clifford, and Penn State really cannot afford very much of cold Sean Clifford this season. I think the coaching staff will say the right things about being patient and you know, wins and losses don't mean that much more just because of the way the last 2 years went. But the fact is, everybody's got to have urgency here, and I think that's going to maybe lead to a tiny bit shorter leash if Sean Clifford has a prolonged slump. Again, I don't see that happening, but they don't really have a ton of time to waste if Sean Clifford struggles for, let's say, three games in a row.
What's your confidence level in Christian Veilleux? Let's say Sean Clifford either chose not to come back or has a season-ending injury in August in training camp.
I'm going to put it at 7.5 because I do feel like the more football I see, the more it matters that a kid can be calm and poised and walk that fine line between confident and humble. And I feel like we've seen enough and heard enough about Christian Veilleux that he just knows how to play that position and has a little bit of that it factor. And I feel like some of that calm and poise, Sean Clifford could maybe learn a thing or two from that.
And especially if you're coming in as that backup guy for whatever the reason is, whether it's injury, lack of performance from the starter, that poise, as we learned a year ago from your backup, is so critical. All right, Dusty, that's it for quarter number two. Quarter number three, we're going to talk about a couple offensive linemen. Stay tuned for that.
This is Jen from Collegiate Athletic Travel. We've been offering travel to the biggest Penn State games for over 50 years. This fall, we continue that tradition in partnership with Keystone Sports Network with a trip to the Penn State Auburn game. Join us for charter flight, staying at the team hotel, transportation to and from the game, and even a great tailgate party at the stadium are included. For more information, go to athletictravel.com or call 1-800-788-4414. See you there.
In his book, Why Penn State, author Greg Woodman takes readers on a trip back in time to Happy Valley in the 1980s, a unique era of gridiron success and rapid expansion that gave our university its modern identity. Whether you're traveling down memory lane or discovering old state's past for the first time, this compilation of rare photos, original essays, and exclusive interviews helps you explore the why behind We Are. Start your journey today. Order online at whypennstate.com.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.
We are Tech Results, located right here in State College. We specialize in providing assistance with many third-party software suites. Our clients include doctor's offices, lawyers, construction companies, and even hairdressers. We provide help with their industry-specific software. Learn more at techresults.com. That's TEK results.com, or give us a call at 814-206-0000.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number three. I'm Jim Galante. He's Dustin Hawkinsmith. Dustin, we're doing our countdown of our KSN Top 40 Most Important Penn State football players going into the 2022 season. The quick review, starting from number 40, we had Caden Saunders, then Johnny Dixon, Chop Robinson, Tyler Warren. In the earlier segment, we did players number 36 and 35. That was running back Katron Allen, the true freshman, and backup quarterback Christian Vaiu. Now, things get interesting, and I'm going to lump numbers 34 and 33 together. And we're talking about offensive guards. Now, first of all, most teams, I don't think fans even know the names of the offensive guards, let alone put a high value on them, especially when one or maybe even both of them end up as backups. But here we go, Dusty. The two guards that we're talking about are Sal Warmley, 6'3", 309. He's a guy, he didn't play last year because of injury, but we've heard that he was going to be a starter prior to the season. He was setting himself up for a starting position. The other player at number 33 is transfer guard Hunter Norzad, 6'3", 310, about the same height and weight. He's the transfer from Cornell, who played tackle while he was at Cornell. He's looking to make that move to Penn State. And immediately, what I always love is a lot of fans are, oh, this is Eric Wilson 2.0. Well, not every player coming from the Ivy League is identical, okay? They can be different. But at least on the surface, Dusty, Warmley, Norzad, they're fighting it out for the same position, most likely, right?
That's my opinion. James Franklin just talked about this recently, about the five players that they've got in competition for the two guard spots. Two of them are Sal Warmley and Hunter Norzad. Landon Tangwall is another. Golden Israel Chumba is another. And J.B. Nelson, who came in January from Lackawanna College. They seem to like those five guys. I wouldn't expect James Franklin to say, yeah, I've got five turds who are competing there. I wouldn't expect that. But I do feel like at these positions, there's an opportunity, as I mentioned before, at running back, addition by subtraction, might kind of be in play here. The way things came together in a not very effective way last year, you can definitely make the case that some fresh faces along the offensive line are indeed a good thing. Sal Warmley, as you mentioned, I've got him at 34 and Hunter Norzad at 33 on this list, for whatever that's worth. Sal Warmley, seemingly in position to start last year. I would guess that was the Anthony Wiggin, Eric Wilson position. Sal Warmley might have started there. And then Hunter Norzad, as you mentioned, James Franklin really likes his combination of strength, size, toughness, and then the experience level of this kid is really what I'm looking at. You can like Sal Warmley, and you can like the way that he's looked behind the scenes when he's healthy, but that's been a bit of a struggle. We didn't see him much in the spring, so it's not like he's got a huge advantage over Norzad in that department in recency. Norzad, coming from the tackle position, he does have to make a transition to guard. I like his chances of doing that. But when push comes to shove, Hunter Norzad just seems like the better bet to emerge. And again, I mean, maybe that's week one. Maybe they're splitting time, just like Wigan and Eric Wilson did last year. But it's hard to believe that Hunter Norzad's combination of tangibles and experience don't make him the top player at probably at right guard of this group. But at the very least, you know, coming into this season, coming into this training camp, the arrival of Hunter Norzad forces everybody to win a legitimate competition to be a starter on this offensive line. That probably goes for Landon Tangwall. That definitely goes for Golden Israel Chumba, JB Nelson, Sal Wormley. At the very least, Hunter Norzad's going to raise the bar of competition. But I think he's more than that. I don't think he's just a guy who's going to make the other guys perform better. I think he's going to be one of Penn State's top five offensive linemen. I think you'll probably see that, just like with Eric Wilson, early in the season. And I do think on paper, on film, Hunter Norzad looks like a little bit better player than Eric Wilson, too.
First of all, Dusty, you use the expression addition by subtraction. It's one I've been using about this offensive line since the end of the season. They lost three starters. I don't think they're going to miss any of the three, okay? And I'll leave it at that. So it's like, okay, what are you bringing in? Fashanu at left tackle. I believe the coaches are confident in him. What we saw of him in the bowl game, we liked. Landon Tangwall, I think you've been one of his biggest fans. I think especially at left guard, combined with Fashanu, I think we're all happy with that. And I think we're also happy with Juice Scruggs moving to center. Caden Wallace back for more at right tackle. But at right guard, that became a question mark. And it seems both Sal Wormley and Hunter Norzad have the possibility of each one of them, or at least one of them, being a very good player. Again, with the idea that Wormley would have started last year if he were healthy. Hunter Norzad, coming from Cornell, was very highly regarded. Yes, I know it's the Ivy League, but he was much more highly regarded there than Eric Wilson. He has experience at tackle, which by most standards is the tougher position to play. Moving inside, I think Hunter Norzad comes in expecting to play. I think Sal Wormley, after a year ago thinking he was going into the season as a starter before injury, I think he believes he should be a starter. In my mind, that means you've got good competition there and you got two chances to get it right.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's exactly what they're going for. They need competition up and down. They need competition for every spot on the two deep. They also need somebody who can maybe cross train between center and guard as the third teamer there. So it'll be interesting to see who that is. I think, you know, the time is now for Sal Wormley. The time is now for that next layer of guys, you know, including Golden Israel Achumba, including a guy like Jimmy Crist, to start making some kind of move and start making a name for themselves, in this competition for spots on the roster. I think they're better. They have a chance to be better across the board. What you had last year was Rashid Walker at less than 100% a lot of the time. Didn't look like himself. Certainly wasn't the guy who was projected as a first round pick. I think they were okay. They were never going to be much more than okay at left guard. Juice Scruggs, who's at center now, I think was clearly their best interior lineman for sure. But now I think you've got a center in him who's a lot more dynamic, a lot more rangy, a lot more athletic than Mike Miranda was. And you have a chance to have a center who can not just kind of hold the line, but maybe blow some guys off the ball. You have a guy coming in who's going to have some experience either way at right guard. And Caden Wallace, you know, the big variable there is how likely is he to bounce back after kind of a down year himself. But I think either way, you know, Wormley has lined up and practiced a lot with Caden Wallace on the right side. Hunter Norzad's got a lot of real game experience, even if that's at the FCS level, can pair him up on the right side. I love the combination of Olu Fashanu and Landon Tangwall on the left side because they're long, they're young, they're athletic. Landon Tangwall has experience at tackle and can view the game from that position. So Olufoshana, who's young, he'll be a new starter. We'll have a guy next to him who kind of understands the assignments of both positions. So I think there's a possibility here. And then I think the big thing out of all this is that more guys on Penn State's two deep will have spent more time under the coaching of Phil Troutwine. And I think that that's meaningful too. You know, you had some guys who their foundation at Penn State along the offensive line was built by another position coach, and they were trying to adjust and acclimate, not to mention it was the first year for an offensive coordinator too. So you want these guys to play fast and confident. There were some things working against them playing fast and confident, where now you're in year two of the same coordinator, you're a year further down the line where you have the guys who are projected to start have more time with Phil Troutwine. I mean, there are some good things and some good reasons to believe that this group can perform collectively better.
I asked you in the earlier segment about your confidence level in Christian Vaiu. What's your confidence level in this offensive line coming into the year?
I'd put it around a 6. I mean, you have the same conversation, it seems, every single year. And you have the same conversation about why this group, why the time is now for them to finally take that big step forward. And I'm just not totally buying yet that this is the group to do it. I mean, Penn State has had probably more talented groups than this one. Penn State has had more experienced groups than this one. And we've seen a lot of the same things play out. So I don't care who it is, coming off of last season and then having new parts in most of these places, it's hard to be confident that they're going to be a dominant group. But I think if Penn State can do some things where their identity is more firm and concrete on the offensive side, if they're, for example, a run-first team and allow their offensive linemen to play that way, it helps them. But, you know, I think we've been down this road so many times, Jim, that it's hard to really say with a ton of confidence that this particular group with a new left tackle, with likely a redshirt freshman starter at left guard, with a first-time starter at center, with maybe a transfer guy at right guard, with a guy at right tackle who had a down year in 2021, how are you going to say with a great deal of confidence that this group collectively is going to be dominant? I think there's a chance for it. I still believe that Phil Troutwine can get this job done, and maybe it starts in 2022, but any Penn State fan who has followed a James Franklin coach team has heard this so often about the offensive line that they're just not buying it until they see it, and that's where I'm coming from on this too.
Understand, I'm not saying dominant, Dustin, but let me give you glass half full. I think Rasheed Walker had a really down year last year. I think Fashanu for a full season will be better than what we saw from Rasheed Walker last year. I think at left guard, we love Landon Tangwall. I think he'll be better there than we got a year ago. I think the move of Juice Scruggs to center will give us better work at the center position. Heck, they moved him there in place of Miranda at the end of last year anyway. I think at right guard, you've got two shots at it with Warmly and Norzad. And I think Caden Wallace would probably admit he had a bit of a down year also. I think he at least will be as good as a year ago, if not better. A chance to be better at all five positions, Dusty. How is that for glass half full?
I love it.
All right, that is it for quarter number 3. Stick around. We've got more on our top 40 in quarter number 4.
This is Jen from Collegiate Athletic Travel. We've been offering travel to the biggest Penn State games for over 50 years. This fall, we continue that tradition in partnership with Keystone Sports Network with a trip to the Penn State-Auburn game. Join us for charter flight, staying at the team hotel, transportation to and from the game, and even a great tailgate party at the stadium are included. For more information, go to athletictravel.com or call 1-800-788-4414. See you there.
What defines the special spirit of Penn State? Why Penn State, by author Greg Woodman, looks to Happy Valley in the 1980s for answers. Featuring rare photos, original essays, and exclusive interviews with Coach Paterno, this beautiful 256-page full-color hardback edition explores the why behind We Are. It's chicken soup for the Nittany Lion's soul and makes the perfect gift for any Penn Stater in your life, including you. Order today at whypennstate.com.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.
We are Tech Results, located right here in State College. Whether it's workstation, server and network installation, problem solving and maintenance, security assessments, or general evaluations, we are your complete IT partner. Learn more at techresults.com. That's TEKResults.com. Or call us at 814-206-0000. We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number four. I'm Jim Galante along with Dustin Hawkinsmith. Dustin, we've been working on our KSN Top 40 Most Important Penn State Football Players. We got through, eight of them. So we are now at numbers 32 and 31 on the list. Let's start with number 32, defensive tackle Devon Ellis, 6'1", 302-pound redshirt junior. And before you comment on him, and we're going to just... spoiler alert, I'll mention number 31 is going to be defensive end Smith Vilbert. And both of them I look at as among those players. Remember a few years ago we said when those recruiting classes were not elite, but we said, boy, they were recruiting on potential. These aren't guys who are necessarily going to play in year one, but wait, year two, year three, year four. Well, we're hitting that point now. It's time for these guys to step up. If they're ever going to do it, it's now. And when I think of the players from that grouping, these are two of those players that I think of as part of that group that people said, you know what, there's some potential there. They're probably not going to burst on the scene as freshmen, but one day they're going to be prominent players. Today's the day, yeah. Dusty.
This is pretty much it, you know. And I think with Devon Ellis at number 32, he probably wasn't ticketed to play the role that he ended up playing last year because, you know, Penn State had some depth and injury issues, and they needed Devon Ellis to play in 13 games. He didn't finish with a ton of stats, but 15 tackles, 1.5 tackles for loss, a fumble recovery, heard the quarterback a couple times. I mean, he was a starter in the Outback Bowl when Derek Tangelo opted out of that game. So he's one of the guys, along with Keziah Izzard, who we'll touch on, I think, in next week's show, that can really build off of those reps. And, you know, I think the defensive tackle rotation and the defensive end rotation both, you know, Devon Ellis and Smith Vilbert are in comparable positions where they're veterans who aren't top of mind when it comes to breakout or explosive players or whatever, but they're going to be important guys for both of those rotations. And I think Devon Ellis will be at a minimum somebody who can be part of that second wave and get the job done, who can lean on the experience he got last year. And I think, I'm pretty sure, last week I did a little Googling of Smith Vilbert for a project I'm working on, and our former KSN, Greg Pickle, did a minute segment on these two guys potentially being impact players. So we have to dig back through our archives. So we have that opinion on film, on audio somewhere. And you're right. This is the year for both of them. I'm not sure, you know, Devon Ellis isn't the biggest name. Outside of PJ Mustipher, you know, you've got Hakeem Beamon making his way back. You've got Keziah Izzard, who I mentioned earlier. You've got Fatoma Mulba also coming along, Jordan Vandenberg. You've got a bunch of different contenders, and Zane Durant, the true freshman defensive tackle. So it's not like Ellis is a slam dunk, but I think he's an important guy, even if he's not a starter, an important guy to eat up quality reps on the inside, and they need that.
Well, the situation is such, as we know, there's really not a starting two defensive tackles. It may be more like a starting four that get rotated. You know, tackle number three and four, they get meaningful downs, meaningful snaps. And that might be even more the case where you have a PJ Mustipher who's coming off a season-ending injury that was serious enough that we don't know, you know, that first game of the year, if he's ready to come right in and get full first-team reps, you know, that kind of guy you plant in there, and if it's significant, he will be there. So he may need rotation time. But it's also that time frame for him where he's got to hear the footsteps. You know, Zane Durant has been getting a lot of play this spring. Jordan Vandenberg, an interesting guy who might end up surprising some people. So when you say now is the time, it's a now or never perhaps time for a Devon Ellis.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting at defensive tackle because you need ideally six good ones the way that they want to rotate players. So it's not like Devon Ellis, if he doesn't take that big dramatic step forward this year, is totally out of it, is going to be replaced, will never play again. It's not like that, but, you know, I think back to like Fred Hansard, who he had an untimely injury, but he ended up kind of stumbling down that rotation and was really just getting scraps last year. So Devon Ellis, you know, you can kind of see that pathway if he doesn't make a move. But you also have, you know, especially with this group in 2022, where you've got your stout, solid guys like Ellis and like Keziah Izzard, who aren't really the burners. They aren't really the first step, you know, guys who are going to win with quickness. But then you've got Hakeem Beamon, who's in that category. You've got Zane Durant in that category. I think maybe Jordan Vandenberg is in that category. So you have different types of defensive tackles as well. How is Penn State going to mix and match them? And then you made a good point, too, about early this fall. I don't expect PJ Mustipher to be playing, you know, a full game's worth of reps right away. He's a big guy, 330 pounds, coming back from a knee injury, going to have to get up to conditioning. He's going to have to get in football shape. He's going to have to deal with heat early in the season. There's a pretty good chance that we only see PJ Mustipher for a little bit the first few weeks until he builds himself up. And if that's the case, they're going to need guys like Devon Ellis and Keziah Izzard to play similar reps to what he would play.
I don't see that guy other than PJ Mustipher, who is that 330-pound guy. Who you put over the nose of the center. So it will be interesting how they rotate those other guys and who steps up. Does anybody step up and say, boy, he's earned those reps, got to put him in there, or is it going to be constant season-long searching for that guy? Similar kind of things at defensive end now as we shift to Smith Vilbert. We all know, you know, the three sacks in the bowl game. And Dustin, it was kind of interesting when you saw it where he was the guy closest to the quarterback as he ran out of bounds. So he gets the sack there. And, you know, I got kind of felt a little better about things when John Scott, the defensive line coach, talked about him last week, saying the light started to go on for him in those weeks of practice prior to the bowl game. So even without that bowl game, without putting all our stock in that, saying, gee, there's his breakout game, the coaching staff still thought he was coming along anyway.
Yeah, and the time frame he mentioned was about 6 weeks, the last 6 weeks of the season. This was a guy who didn't play a ton of football. He was more focused on basketball early in his high school career. that needed some time. You know, he needed year three for sure, maybe year four, to really become a full-time football player and make use of that length. You know, he's 6'6", 260, whatever his dimensions are. So you can see it in his tangible skills. But also, you know, as they mentioned, as the light bulb came on, they really have seemed to feel confident that he has a high upside. And, you know, John Scott said that through the spring, he continued to advance, and they seem to have legitimate confidence in Smith-Vilbert to play some quality reps. One thing I thought was funny was John Scott basically, he said a couple weeks ago that he didn't even realize that Smith-Vilbert had three sacks at the half. So I'm digging back through, and I was reading down through the Outback Bowl transcripts from James Franklin, and James Franklin was like, man, I didn't even know Smith-Vilbert had three sacks. And I think that both of the guys, those guys months apart said the same thing, which I think speaks to the nature of the sacks that weren't, hey, I'm flying off the edge, I'm dominating the tackle, and I'm beating him to the quarterback who remains in the pocket. This was KJ Jefferson. You know, one of them, you mentioned the nearest guy when he went out of bounds. The other one was kind of a coverage sack where he stepped up in the pocket, and it was Smith-Vilbert in the middle of the field who kind of did a little stunt and was there. So I think those three sacks were great, but absolutely what you mentioned, the work he was doing behind the scenes is a lot more meaningful than those three sacks were. I think he's a legitimate guy, and I think they could use somebody like him because, again, I'm not ready to say Adisa Isaac is 100%. He's himself again. We need to see that. Nick Tarburton, you know, he stayed healthy last season, but he struggled with that previously. I mean, there's not a lot of sure things at defensive end. Somebody like Smith-Vilbert is going to have to step into a role, especially if injury or something happens, where he is able to affect the quarterback and he's able to get that job done.
This is so similar to the conversation we had about the tackles. You have in Adisa Isaac, comparable to P.J. Mustipher, coming back off of injury. Don't know what we're going to get, but we think there's high-level play there. Nick Tarburton coming back, we don't look at him as that dynamic defensive end who's going to get three sacks in one half against the quarterback. But you also have a Dusty, the youngsters. You got to look over your shoulder if you're Smith-Vilbert, and you see Danny Dennis-Sutton and Chop Robinson coming to town. And those two, you probably can say, are dynamic players. So if you don't do it now, look out. Someone's going to pass you by.
Ideally, you'd have this range of competition be more established players, but this is what you want. I mean, this is what James Franklin wants, where nothing is guaranteed for anybody. And Smith-Vilbert is just as likely to emerge as the number one or number two defensive end as he is to emerge as the number six defensive end. Like, you got to hold up your end of the bargain every single day in practice, because Chop Robinson is a very gifted athlete. Dennis Sutton is a very gifted athlete who's poised and mature, and I think he's going to play a role. I think you have a full range of guys in this defensive end group. Smith-Vilbert is in that interesting spot where he still has upside left, but he also has some experience to go with it, especially late last year. So he's in a unique position to maybe take a step forward. But as you said, he has to, because this defensive end group has a lot of different names there who have a chance to do it if he doesn't.
Dustin, through the years in doing this show, we've typically, during the off season, have had that list of players that we'd do a segment on. It's do or die time for them. I think these two guys would be on that list, Devon Ellis and Smith-Vilbert. We'll see come fall if either one of them does step up. They both have the capability. We'll see if it happens. All right, Dusty, that is it for the show. Thank you all for listening. Be sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
This is Jen from Collegiate Athletic Travel. We've been offering travel to the biggest Penn State games for over 50 years. This fall, we continue that tradition in partnership with Keystone Sports Network with a trip to the Penn State Auburn game. Join us for charter flight, staying at the team hotel, transportation to and from the game, and even a great tailgate party at the stadium are included. For more information, go to athletictravel.com or call 1-800-788-4414. See you there.
In his book, Why Penn State, author Greg Woodman takes readers on a trip back in time to Happy Valley in the 1980s, a unique era of gridiron success and rapid expansion that gave our university its modern identity. Whether you're traveling down memory lane or discovering Old State's past for the first time, this compilation of rare photos, original essays, and exclusive interviews helps you explore the why behind We Are. Start your journey today. Order online at whypennstate.com.
Hi, this is Dustin Hawkinsmith from the Keystone Sports Network. For the best Penn State football analysis and commentary, go to KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. The rest of the KSN team and I will bring you game reviews, player evaluation, recruiting news, and plenty more. You may even hear directly from some of your favorite recruits. That's KeystoneSportsNetwork.com. You can also take Keystone Sports Network with you. Go to your app store and download Keystone Sports for your mobile device. For Penn State football news 52 weeks a year, count on the Keystone Sports Network.
We are Tech Results, located right here in State College. We specialize in providing assistance with many third-party software suites. Our clients include doctor's offices, lawyers, construction companies, and even hairdressers. We provide help with their industry-specific software. Learn more at techresults.com. That's TEKResults.com. Or give us a call at 814-206-0000.